It'd be good actually to have a copy of the Bible or the Bible with you, because it is a long passage, as John said, and in fact I'm not going to read it all. So when those moments come in the sermon, as they inevitably do, and you're bored, you might want to read the passage. We've got a portion of Genesis chapter 25, verses 19 to 34. And then chapter 27, beginning of chapter 27, right the way through to the end of chapter 28. So the best part of 2.5 chapters here. Would have been easy just to read it and then sit down again, really, and make your own minds up, but... So the story of Jacob. Or is it? Actually, it's a story of several individuals. Snapshot of one moment in history. Or is it? Actually, it's the story of the Lord's will for the salvation of the world being brought to bear in and through, but mostly despite the actions of the people involved in this story. It's a fascinating story. And if you wonder what it's got to do with us all these years later, then hopefully by the end we'll have some idea. The story is about God's will being done in the lives of these people. Why do we say that? Well, chapter 25, verses 19 to 23, we will read. This is the account of Abram's son, Isaac. Abram became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel the Aramean from Padam Aram, and sister of Laban the Aramean. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. The Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled each other within her, and she said, "Why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." So, do we hear this? You know, we often think of the story of Jacob, of a scheming man getting one over or two over on his brother, who sells him his birthright and he steals that blessing from his father. These are the Sunday school stories, aren't they, that we learnt as children. But here, right at the start of Jacob's life, we see actually what is really going on. Here is the Lord behind the scenes. Here is the Lord who has chosen Jacob, the younger son from the womb of his mother, to go on to be the one whom he blesses. God's will for Jacob and Esau is right here, before either of them was born. Jacob chosen over and above his elder brother to receive God's favour and blessing. So despite all the scheming that follows, all the scheming that you heard about at Sunday school, despite all of that, this is the Lord's will. And we need to bear this in mind as we work through these chapters. So a quick overview of these chapters then. Verses 24 then through to verse 26 is the birth of Esau and Jacob. And it's that favourite Sunday school story again of how Esau was born first, and he was hairy and red, which is why he was given the name Esau, or sometimes Edom. One means hairy, one means red. And equally famous, I guess, how Jacob is born grasping the heel of his brother. And you read in your footnotes there that grasping the heel is a sort of colloquialism meaning deceiver. So he's given the name Jacob, which means deceiver, right there from birth. He's given that name. Verses 27 through to 34 is the bit of the story where Jacob gets Esau to sell him his birthright for a bowl of soup. Again, that story that you'll remember, I'm sure, from when you were children. And then we skip to chapter 27 and the second Sunday school story. Isaiah is aging and going blind. He knows he won't be long before he dies, and he wants to bless his favourite son, Esau. Rebekah, his wife, scheming, gets Jacob to stand in for Esau so that Jacob will get the blessing. You know how he did that, and we'll look about that in a few minutes. Esau gets home, can't believe what's happened, pleads with his father, but it's no good. And at the end of that part of the chapter, towards verse 40, he vows revenge on Jacob, saying he will kill his brother. Verses 41 to 46 then, Rebekah overhears this vow of vengeance that Esau has made, and she urges Jacob to leave home and to go and live with Uncle Laban. Chapter 28, verses 1 to 5, we see Jacob, who now sees, I think, that God's will can't be changed, can't be thwarted, and actually blesses Jacob properly and sends him on his way. And Esau spitefully marries another Hittite girl. This will be the third Hittite girl that he's married. In other words, someone not of his own people. And he does it because he knows it will upset his mum and dad. That's in verses 6 to 9 of chapter 28. And then verses 10 to 22, we have the dream. Jacob's on his journey, has a dream. The Lord speaks to him. And really that's the beginning of his journey of faith. So it's a big, big story. And I looked at it and I thought, well, there's several ways to do this. What I've decided to do, in fact, given that this story is about how the Lord's will works in and through our lives, is to look at each character in turn and just see how we compare to them, how we relate to God's will at work in our life. So we begin with Isaac. Isaac was the long-awaited son of Abraham. You remember he was spared by God as a child from being sacrificed by his father Abraham. He married Rebekah, as we've seen, who was of the same people, same tribe as it were, not a Canaanite therefore. And Isaac becomes the first generation of God's promise to Abraham to bless the earth with countless generations. And it seems, doesn't it, that Isaac is a prayerful man. In chapter 25 and verse 21, as his wife is barren, Isaac prays to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. The Lord answered his prayer and his wife, Rebekah, became pregnant. You'll see that he was 40 when they married. He was 60 when the child was born. There was 20 years of barrenness and therefore perhaps 20 years of him praying. It seems that he was a prayerful man. We have Isaac marked out as a man of God who knew of the promises of God to Abraham, his father, and therefore of his part in the purposes of God through his life and through his sons out into the world. Presumably he's in on this prophecy that God gives Rebekah about her twins, that God's chosen one, the next in line, would be Jacob and not Esau, as you might expect, as the eldest is the one who normally gets the blessing. And yet, in verse 28, we read that Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Esau, the hunter, who could fetch Isaac his wild game because he liked a pot of stew himself. And on in chapter 27, this story, the blessing and who gets the blessing. We see Rebekah and Jacob scheming so that Jacob eventually gets the blessing. But it's easy to overlook the fact that in fact it was Isaac who just called Esau to himself to receive the blessing. He didn't say, sons, both of you come to me, and I'm going to bless Esau as the eldest, and Jacob, you'll get a sort of second son's blessing. He just called Esau to himself, which was against the tradition of his country. Isaac's plans didn't involve Jacob, just Esau, his favourite, despite knowing that Jacob was God's chosen one. You see, for Isaac, it's a case of knowing the Lord's will, yet not liking it and trying to change it. Have you ever done that? Not liking the Lord's will for your life, perhaps, and trying to change it? Famously, Jonah was like that, wasn't he? Sent to whatever it was, and the Lord had to bring him back through the whale. What about you? What about me? Are we like Isaac? Sometimes like to change the Lord's will for our lives. Rebecca. Now, she clearly knew the Lord's plans and purposes for the two boys. It was clear, the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. She knew what God's plans were, what God's wills were for her children. You might expect her then to sit back and to trust God and to let it happen. No, just the opposite, in fact. Jacob is her favourite. He's the homeboy. He's the thinker or the plotter, as the Hebrew word has that sort of connotation to here. And she does everything she can to ensure that Jacob gets Isaac's blessing in chapter 27. She tricks poor old blind Isaac by making soup just as he likes it to fool his taste buds. By dressing Jacob in Esau's clothes, to trick his sense of smell, because he can smell his oldest son in those clothes. By putting that sheepskin on him, to trick Isaac's sense of touch, so he feels hairy to him. This is complete deceit to bring about what the Lord had promised anyway. So Jacob gets blessed, as the Lord had planned. And you'd think now, she's seen the Lord's will being done, she'd begin to trust the Lord. But no. She hears Esau vowing revenge on his brother. He's going to kill him. And she urges Jacob to flee for a while, chapter 27, verse 44. And when things are safe, I'll bring you back. Well, again, it turned out to be 20 years before Jacob returned home. You see, for all her scheming and lack of trust, Rebecca was left without her favourite son for all those years, the consequence of her scheming instead of trusting in God. She tried to hurry along God's will. She tried to make sure that the Lord's will would be done in her own way. I wonder if we've ever tried to do that and hurry along the Lord's will for our lives. Esau. It's easy to think of him, actually, as you read through this, as the hard done by, innocent party in all of this. He didn't plan to be born first, to be the elder son. He can't help it if he's not the one chosen by God. That's God's choice. He seems to be the object of all this scheming, and he suffers because of it, humanly speaking. In law, the birthright, the rights as the firstborn son, were his. In law, he would inherit his father's blessing and his father's wealth and his father's land and his father's flocks and everything that his father had. All he had to do, humanly speaking, was to wait for Isaac to die and to receive all of that. So what possessed him to hand it all over for just a pot of stew? Well, the New Testament actually has a theory. And if you turn to Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 14, the writer says this: make every effort to live in peace with all men and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one misses the grace of God and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. See that no one is sexually immoral or is godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. Afterwards, as you know, when he wanted to inherit this blessing, he was rejected. He could bring about no change of mind, though he sought the blessing with tears. Godless, like Esau. How does that work? The rest of them appear to be godless as well, don't they? Well, here's a man driven by his passions and his appetites. His first priority, it seems, was his hunting and his stew and that kind of thing. He was always busy, no time to reflect, no time to establish a relationship with God. He lived on his instincts and on his natural strengths. And we may think that it's pushing what little we have a bit too far to call him godless on the back of that. Yet he does say, doesn't he, when he gives up his birthright for a bowl of stew, you know, give me some stew, I'm dying for a bowl of stew. No, you're not, Esau. You might be hungry, you're not dying. And how incredibly non-thinking was it to hand over his birthright just for a pot of stew? The man lives on his instincts and his natural strengths, as good as they are, humanly speaking, but there's no room within that for God. And in that sense, the writer to the Hebrews calls him godless. And later he weeps at his father's feet, chapter 27, verse 38, and he vows revenge on his brother, chapter 27, verse 42. And hearing Isaac bless Jacob and tell him not to marry a Canaanite woman to keep, you know, the whole family line pure, it's then that Esau goes out and does just that. Chapter 28 and verse 7. Again, responding to his instincts within. The writer to the Hebrews has sussed him out. Because of his instincts, because of his own strength, he is godless. You and me? We live in our own strength, according to our instincts. What part does God's purposes play in our life? God's will in our life. Which brings us to Jacob. Named at birth the grasper of the heel, which being translated means deceiver. From out of nowhere in the story, he plays on Esau's hunger and gains Esau's birthright. He's complicit with Rebekah in tricking Isaac to get Esau's rightful blessing. This man is no saint, rightfully called a deceiver. But this is hard, isn't it, to understand? He's chosen and called of God before birth to actually become the nation of Israel. What are we to make of this? Well, let's read the last part of the story, chapter 28 and verse 10. Jacob's on the way to Uncle Laban to hide from Esau. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night, because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. And early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel, to the city, though the city used to be called Luz. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God, and this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. So here, on a human level, is the second son of Isaac on the run, packed off by his mum, having upset his father and his brother by cheating him out of his rightful blessing, Esau out of his rightful blessing. But we know, at a different level, the Lord has chosen him. And Jacob will go on to become Israel, that great nation. But you see, at this point in his life, there's no evidence of the Lord at work. In none of the years of his life since he was born, as far as we can tell, there's no evidence that Jacob even knows who the Lord is. It would appear from the evidence we have that he's lived his life in ignorance of him. And yet, as he falls asleep on his journey, the Lord appears to him in a dream. Because this is the Lord's will going on here. I guess the vision, the dream, is important. This stairway from heaven to earth with angels descending and descending and the Lord at the top. The symbolism, surely, is God's involvement with mankind. Earth and heaven are not two separate kingdoms that God in his and we in ours, and there the twain shall meet. God is involved with us. Heaven touches earth. God's kingdom comes. His will is done on earth as it is in heaven. But more important than the vision, I think, are the words and the promise to Jacob. Verses 13 to 14 are what we've come to expect about the blessing in the land. Abraham's heard these words. Isaac has heard these words. I am the God of your father Abraham and God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. Jacob would be blessed, just as the promise went to Abraham, just as the promise went to his father Isaac, now to Jacob. He would be blessed, the land would be his descendants would spread out and embrace that blessing, and actually they would become a blessing to the rest of the world. But verse 15 is new ground in the Lord's promises to these generations of men, to these patriarchs. Now it gets personal. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Do you hear this? Jacob, this deceiver, this sinner, with no thought for God as far as we can tell hitherto, God has put his finger on him. He's chosen him. He's called him. And now he promises to be with him and to keep him and to fulfill all his promises in and through him. Do you not find this encouraging? That God takes people like Jacob, actually like you and me, and calls us to himself in Christ, unworthy as we are. And he heaps blessings on us, and he promises to be with us and to keep us until he has fulfilled his purposes in our lives. We may not be as outrageously deceitful as Jacob was, but we're sinners who need God's grace in our lives. We may not think we're as big a cog in the machinery of God's will on earth as Jacob became. Yet the small cogs in the machine are just as necessary. The way we live our lives, the way we do what we do Monday to Friday and Saturday and Sunday is important in the purposes of God in this life. That intentional conversation that we'll have with our neighbour during Saltersford Connect over these next few weeks. We don't know, do we? But that neighbour might become a Christian, they might have a conversation with someone else, they might have a conversation with someone else, and before you know where you are, the next Billy Graham or whoever is on the way. Do you know this is God's plan? His purposes being achieved through our lives. How you handle tough situations, trusting in God's goodness. The kindness you show to that person in work, the demeanour you wear, the witness you are all part of God's purposes for your life. It may be more than this. God may have his hand on you and call you to work through you in short-term mission opportunities, to go to Novogrodovka next time there's a team going over there, to go to Uganda next time there's a team going over there, to go wherever there are these opportunities, maybe to become a youth worker, one or two of you, or to be a missionary, or to become a pastor of a church. At whatever level, however, you know, whatever we perceive these cogs to be in the wheel, they're all important. What we do, how we live, is important. God's will being played out in our lives. But in the end, this story is not about any of the actors. It's not about Isaac who tried to change God's will. It's not about Rebecca who tried to hurry God's will along. It's not about Esau and Jacob who lived on their instincts, both of them, who lived in their own strength. It's about the Lord and his call and his purposes and his choosing and using of people like Jacob, you and me, to bring about his plans for the salvation of the world. Jacob's response to this vision is telling, I think, isn't it? There's a sense of fear you hear in his words. There's a sense of wonder and of awe. There are words of praise. There are acts of worship. And there's a promise to serve the Lord. But this is Jacob, isn't it? It's a conditional promise, perhaps. Verse 20, Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I'm taking, and etc., etc., then I will do this, this, and this. And maybe our response has to be to trust the Lord completely, to work out his purposes in our life, to worship him, to give everything to him, to the glory of his name.